Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Thursday, February 2nd, 2017. What's basically been going on is H5N8 has still been spreading across Europe and into Africa now. Uganda is a new place of interest now, and so is Nigeria's had some more. So Dr. Nyman will go into an give an update on the latest situation. Dr. Nyman, welcome back.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to be back. I thought it'd be good to just do a quick update on H5N8. Things have been pretty active on that front, and that's why I'm kind of behind on everything. The H5N8 mostly has been related to updating the map. The map is growing with dozens of new cases. These are all poultry or wild bird cases that have been happening on pretty much a daily basis. As you mentioned, it has gone into to Africa, and new countries are being announced in Europe. Portugal was today, and Luxembourg was a couple days ago. And as you mentioned, Uganda is one area I want to talk about a little bit. This is clearly the largest geographic expansion of H5. Most of the activity has been in Europe, but that may be a function of reporting and how aggressively testing is done, or how obvious the accumulation of dead birds is. Just to back up a little bit, I mean, we're talking mostly about H5N8. I'm going to talk a little bit about the sequences. There's another version, which is H5N5. Both of these have the same H5. It's the old Fujian strain, which started in Asia, was first identified in 2005. And just as a bit of history, the major expansion of H5N1 really began in late 2003, early 2004. The first cases, most of the activity was in Southeastern Asia. And the first cases actually were human cases in northern Vietnam. And they were initially came out as being influenza A positive, but unsubtypable. The two seasonal flus, H1 and H3, were both negative. Eventually it was acknowledged that it was H5, it was H5N1. And then it was clear that the H5N1 that was in northern Vietnam really was widespread, and they were kind of named on the order that they were identified really in humans. So the virus that was identified in Vietnam was designated as clade 1. At about the same time, there were reports of poultry dying in Indonesia. They denied it initially. And a few months into 2005, they finally acknowledged that it was H5N1. It wasn't Newcastle disease, which they were maintaining. And then sequences started coming out, and the sequences generally have the best information because they include the collection date, and they include at least some location information, and they say who actually did the sequencing. And you can get a pretty better idea what's going on, although the information can be after the fact, depending upon how quickly the sequences are made public and how extensive these characterization sheets were. But there was clade 2, which was distinct from clade 1. There was in Indonesia, and then more sequences came out, and clade 2 got divided up. And by 2005, there was the Indonesian version, which was 2.1. And then there was a version that was at Qinghai Lake, which is 2.2. And then there was a version that was at southern China, which was 2.3. And 2.3 was frequently referred to as the Fujian strain because it was identified initially in Fujian province in 2005. And 2.2 was called the Qinghai strain because it was identified at Qinghai Lake also in 2005. And it was really the 2.2 at Qinghai Lake, which was initially identified in wild birds, included bar-headed geese. There were literally thousands of bar-headed geese that had died at Qinghai Lake. Qinghai Lake is actually in central China. It's the largest lake in China. There's lots of wild birds. Other species were identified there. And the worry was that these were long-range migratory birds. And if they were infected with H5N1, they could potentially carry the virus over very long distances. And that concern was realized a few months later when the virus started showing up in Russia and Kazakhstan. In the summer of 2005, at that time, there had been no H5N1 reported in either of those countries, and then it was also found in Mongolia. In all of these cases, it was the Qinghai strain, and that was an indication that indeed the wild birds could carry this virus over very long distances. The concern was that since they were in Russia and Mongolia over the summer at their breeding sites, which were at the intersection of multiple flyways, that when it started to get cold and the wild birds started to migrate to warmer climates, they would really take the virus in all directions. And that's exactly what happened. It showed up in Europe, and then in the Middle East, and then in Africa. It also showed up in South Asia. And by mid-2006, there were about 50 different countries that had reported H5N1, and all of them were the Qinghai strain, and it didn't matter whether the virus was identified in wild birds or in poultry or in humans, they all had the same virus. And so that pretty much cemented the role of the wild birds in spreading the virus, and raised concerns that the problem that was pretty much confined to initially Southeast Asia would there was some evidence of South Korea, but it was initially in Asia. It was in China and countries along the coast and along the East Coast and in Southeast Asia. Going into Indonesia, that was the extent of the initial cases, and now it really spread to multiple continents. And it did kind of fade. It became endemic, really, in Egypt. It's still in Egypt now. There are still human cases in Egypt. They're still caused by the Qinghai strain. It gradually evolved over the years as to which virus was in the wild birds and which one spread. This was somewhat dependent upon what was really going on in Asia. The Fujian strain, which was H5N1, there were actually, it was clade 2.3. There were a couple different versions, 2.3.2 and 2.3.4. The 0.4 was being found in humans. Initially, the 0.2 was just in wild birds that kind of migrated along the eastern coast of China. Then it started showing up in South Korea and Japan. And eventually that version flew into Europe. And then it was still H5N1. But then the Fujian strain started to reassort, and the H5 showed up with a bunch of different N's. And that started mostly in China in right around 2011, 2012. And then in 2014, one version showed up in Europe. In the spring of 2014, it showed up in South Korea. And then in the fall of 2014, that made its way to Europe, and that was H5N8. And there were a few different versions of that sweet pea strain that was with H5N8. The one was in Europe, the kind of missing link between South Korea and Europe was found in a wild bird that was shot in Siberia. Russia kind of reported that a little bit late. They reported at the end of 2014 in the sequence, so that it was a little bit evolved away from the virus in Korea and a little less evolved from the virus in Europe. So that kind of indicated that, you know, the cases in Europe were essentially the same as its prior ones, that it kind of started in Asia and went up to Russia over the summer and then on to Europe in the fall. And but in 2014, it kind of went in a few different directions. Another version that was found in a crane in Japan gave rise to major outbreaks both in Taiwan as well as in North America. In both cases, there was reassortment, and several different versions showed up in Taiwan. It was not only H5N8, but also H5N2 and H5N3. In both cases of the other serotypes, there was additional reassortment, and it picked up other internal genes. The different Ns, the N2 and the N3, were found in wild birds in Asia. Same thing happened in North America. There was H5N8, and that also gave rise to H5N1 and H5N2. And again, the N1 and the N2 came from wild birds, but in this case, they were wild birds from North America. So the version in first Canada, then the United States, was really a mixture where some of the genes were of Asian origin, including the H5, which was high path, and other genes were of North American origin. The things quieted down in 2015, but in 2016, they came back with a vengeance. It was a slightly different version of H5N8. There had been reports of a large die-off in Siberia again, this time in Ouse Lake. Ouse Lake had been implicated in earlier spreads, and somewhat after the fact, sequences were deposited from Qinghai Lake. And that was not reported by China in an OIE report, but there were over 50 sets of sequences that were deposited there and at GFAD. And the sequences at Qinghai Lake were very closely related to the sequences at Ouse Lake. And they were, again, related. They were still the same Fujian H5, but it was slightly different than the one that showed up in 2014. And there were different combinations of internal genes. So it was a new version that was easily distinguished. But then when sequences started coming out of Europe, it was clear that there has been additional reassortment. Actually, in addition to Europe, two sequences came out of India. All of these had similar H5s. They were all the same Fujian strain, but they had different constellations of internal genes. The two sequences out of India differ from each other, and the sequences in Europe differed from India. And so initially, there were four different versions of the virus based upon reassortment, and all of which were H5N8. And so that was kind of an unprecedented level of reassortment, and that's part of the reason there's been this concern about exactly what is going on. And as it turns out, a new serotype showed up with H5N5. That again has the same H5. The sequences for the H and the N were just recently released. The N5 really has kind of an Asian origin. The most closely related sequences actually were out of Singapore. I think it was an H6N5, but in any event, it definitely was an Asian origin. And full sequences haven't come out, so it's not really clear how much of the H5N5 is all the same constellation as far as the other six internal genes are concerned, and whether there's a mixture there. So it's caused some concern because there are so many different genetic versions of the virus. There really haven't been as many sequences as there should be. So it's really not even clear whether these four different versions of H5N8 and at least one version of H5N5 is really the extent of the genetic diversity. And it has taken its toll. The countries, you know, tried to bring their poultry indoors to avoid outbreaks. That move was largely unsuccessful. Several countries have reported a very large number of poultry outbreaks. One in particular was Hungary. The full extent of Hungary is a little bit unclear. They reported a lot of cases. They were very precise on the locations. The coordinates actually pointed to individual farms. And it was very clear that, A, they had a lot of farms infected in a fairly concentrated area, but it was also fairly clear that there were a lot more farms that were, you know, literally a stone's throw away that had not been reported as being infected. And then about a month ago, the reports out of Hungary essentially stopped. And so it's unlikely that the virus stopped that suddenly. So exactly how many more? There were over 200 farms when they stopped reporting. So it's not clear how many farms actually ended up being infected in that case. But there have been major outbreaks in other countries. Poland has a lot of poultry farms. Yeah, so does Israel, a lot for its size. And Germany has had a lot of backyard farms in particular that have been infected. And then there's, you know, a number that are in kind of the Middle East region and in Iran and in the southern steppes regions of Russia. And so they're all on the map. You can see them. They're kind of color-coded. The ones that are in poultry are in red. The ones that are in wild birds are blue. When sequences have been released, there's a little Erlenmeyer flask that's representing the sequence, the locations of the birds with the sequences. And so it's been a challenge to keep the map updated because, like I say, they add cases every day. Several of the countries actually have websites that are updated daily. That includes Germany and France. And recently we found a site for, I think it was Slovenia, one of the Slavic states, and we have Bulgaria, and other ones update them weekly, and so with OIE reports, and so the cases that show up are showing up at a very high frequency. The one that was kind of a new case was what Ryan mentioned in Uganda. Bird flu, period, had never been reported in Uganda previously. That was an interesting set of circumstances that indicated how easily the data could be misreported. The initial reports indicated that it was H5 that was in Uganda. Actually, initial reports just said bird flu. They didn't say what the serotype was, and then it came out as H5. It was put out by the the Agriculture, Ministry of Agriculture, put that out and filed an OIE report. And then the Ministry of Health put out a press release and said it was H5N1. The likelihood that it was H5N1 was very low because the outbreak that was current for this year was really largely H5N8, and that was in the wild birds. The outbreak in Uganda was on Lake Victoria, and they were wild birds initially, but there's also poultry followed up. And there were large numbers of birds involved, the wild birds involved, which sounded like H5N8. This press release that came out that said it was H5N1 was kind of suspect because, there were reports of some humans with symptoms, and the Ministry of Health really wouldn't have access to any samples unless they were humans. The reports on the humans sounded a little bit suspect. Initially, they said they were symptoms, and they said they were cold symptoms. And there were like a dozen or two dozen cases, and that seemed to be way too high, even though there were reports that people, locals, particularly the ones on various islands on Lake Victoria, were actually catching sick birds and eating them. And so, there was clearly the possibility that biosecurity was not ideal, and people could conceivably get infected. But the numbers, they seemed too high. The symptoms seemed too mild. None of these cases had been hospitalized. And then they kind of faded away, and the Ministry of Health indicated that they had all tested negative for bird flu. But the rumors kind of took off that this was H5N1. It was causing a large number of human cases. And the mapping data really raised serious questions. I mean, there was some H5N1 in Egypt, but that was a Qinghai strain, and that, generally had been, there were cases in Israel and Palestine region in Israel that had H5N1, but those were all the Qinghai strain that, flew into the area in 2005 and became endemic, and they weren't really spreading out of that area. And then there was the earlier version of Fujian, the 2.3.2, had actually made its way to Western Africa a couple of years ago. And so there was some residual virus there. So there were cases in Cameroon, and I think there were some in Nigeria and other countries like the Ivory Coast, but those didn't seem to be in the wild birds, and those were on the other side of the continent. So those didn't seem to be a likely source for the virus in Uganda. And it kind of spread on the internet, and there were reports that were coming out saying it was H5N1, which didn't make a lot of sense because the only country, the only department that would really have samples was the Department of Agriculture. And the Department of Agriculture wasn't saying a whole lot beyond the OIE report that said H5. And then the Agriculture did come out with a statement that said the reports that it was H5N1 were false, that essentially they had the ability to determine if it was bird flu and determine if it was H5, but they really weren't equipped to find out what the N was, and that they would have to send samples out to collaborators in Italy, which they did. And then eventually, which was I think the beginning of this week or the end of last week, they did, actually was on it's on Saturday that the first report came that they had determined that indeed it was H5N8 as expected. And then they did file an OIE report, which I think was Monday or Tuesday, which confirmed it was H5N8. And so that was, an example where all of the data from the wild birds and all the data from the map, suggested that if a country was going to be picking up H5 in particular that it had never seen before, and it was killing wild birds, that it was almost certainly going to end up being H5N8 if it was in any of these continents like Africa, Europe, the Middle East, Southern Asia. There was H5N6 that was ongoing, still is ongoing in Japan and South Korea, but that seemed to be fairly well confined there, although there's some H5N6 in China. But that didn't seem to be in the wild birds that were migrating through Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. And so that's kind of where things stand right now. The H5N8 is clearly going to be the largest number of reported cases anyway, outside of China or Asia or Eastern Asia. This is a very large number of cases in a large number of countries. In Europe, Israel has got record numbers. Some of the other areas where it doesn't have record numbers yet, it probably has to do with reporting and also due to the time of year. That what happened in 2005-2006 is at least the number of confirmed cases was rather limited in the fall, and it really wasn't until the spring, April or so. So we have another, or March at least. So we at least have another month or two before the birds that flew south will start heading back north, and that is really where there are major outbreaks. So it's record numbers for the fall. It's record numbers for the beginning of the calendar year for, like, January. And chances are that there will be record numbers all the way through the springtime and into summer. And so that's what we're expecting. We're kind of keeping our eyes on the H5, and they waiting for a little bit more sequence data to see what's going on. Still has not been a confirmed human case. Whether that will materialize or not, it's a little bit unclear. And, there's some concern that it would come to North America. There's no evidence of that at this time. There's not even clear evidence that it's made its way to Eastern Asia. There are some cases in Taiwan, but it's not clear if this is the H5N8 that's currently widespread in Europe or whether this is really a leftover H5N8 from the outbreak in 2014-2015. And those sequences really haven't come out from Eastern Asia. It's not clear whether the H5N8 is there. There's been a little bit of H5N2 in North America. There was one case that was identified near Fairbanks, Alaska, that happened kind of over the summer. And then there was a recent case in Montana. That's really been the extent of cases here, which would suggest that there's not necessarily going to be a lot in North America, because most of the cases in 2014 in North America were identified during hunting season. They were really from hunter killed wild birds. The various groups, FDA and conservation groups, collected samples from birds that had been killed by hunters, and that's where most of the positives were. But there was a big explosion of cases in the spring, particularly in the Midwest, in turkeys, in Minnesota, and in chickens in Iowa. And so it is possible that there will be an outbreak, a much bigger outbreak, come springtime in the U.S. But if there is, it's probably going to be the H5N2 that showed up in 2014, because that's what these other cases were. The case in Montana, the case of Fairbanks, was the H5 a version of the H5N8 that's been circulating in Europe. It's really the H5N2 that came over to North America in late 2014. So that pretty much wraps it up. This was just kind of a quick update on the H5N8 situation. There's a lot of activity with H5N6 that I'm not going to talk about. And Zika is still around. There was actually a case that moved out of Brownsville, Texas, to a traveler that was a little bit further north in Texas. And I think Brownsville is up to 6 local cases now. And there's still activity in Florida. Those are kind of the only two areas in the United States with they still have mosquitoes year-round. So it's a little bit early for mosquitoes to be flying around in the United States. I'll probably be limited in those two areas for a little bit. And when it'll kind of get a resurgence come spring and the summer or when weather starts heating up and then mosquitoes start flying around again. But there's likely to be an increase in microcephaly cases due to the explosion of travel-related cases that showed up in the U.S. Really, that began over the summer. And so those cases that were infected in the first trimester should be giving birth beginning around now. So it's expected the number of microcephaly cases will increase, I think, in places like, I think it was Connecticut. They were monitoring 30 women that had been infected. And I'm sure there's similar numbers in multiple states, which haven't necessarily given out a whole lot of detail on how many women have tested positive for Zika and have not yet given birth. And so those outcomes may make some news in the upcoming months. The interest in Zika has died down somewhat, largely because of the absence of the mosquitoes and the absence of the dramatic spread, which was much more common over the summer, especially in southern Florida. So I think that wraps it up for right now. We'll do an update when I get a little bit more caught up or when there's human cases for H5N8 or H5N6. And there is an explosion of H7N9. We're trying to get a handle on the data there. It's coming out a little bit delayed, but there are a lot of cases in China. And there have been a few sequences, some of which I haven't really looked at very closely. And so there may be an update in the not-too-distant future on H7N9 also.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Nyman, for the information. Your listeners can always go to our website, recombinomics.co. We always put the latest information on there continuously all the time.